You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Wednesday edition of the show. Noah, we're here and we're alive. I'm not really sure how, but we are here. We got into a hailstorm in Auburn, Alabama, my friend.
I'm going to be real, man. I have been through a lot over the last 20 minutes or so. Big hail. Maybe not big. I should say pea-sized hail.
It was bigger than a Trevor pea, man. Said. It was bigger than a pea.
And then I also found out the Cleveland Browns cut Austin Hooper, and I've just been through a range of emotions right now, none of them good. Wondering if my vehicle is okay. It's fine. Everything's good. I think the hail stopped. But then on top of that, just seeing Cleveland set what they've done so well over the last 2 years, at least getting to a place where they weren't the doormat of the NFL, seeing them set it all on fire. It's really upsetting to me right now. Really upsetting.
It has been a crazy last 20 minutes. There's no doubt about it. When we went to lunch, we were coming back. The rain had started, and it was a downpour of rain. And as we were turning in here to Auburn Network, the hail started. And you said,
I was texting people, and they're like, it's hailing? And I'm like, yes!
You asked me, you said, is that hail? And I said, yes, it is, because I grew up in Ohio, okay? I've seen hail. I know what it is. That does not happen in Auburn, Alabama in the middle of March. That does not, it's not supposed to happen, though.
It does. This is the time of year where the weather, this is the month where it truly lives up to March Madness from a weather standpoint in Alabama.
I'll be real. It is madness out there right now. I will go ahead and say that. But we are here. We're alive. I hope our cars are okay.
They're fine. I
haven't made a chance. I haven't made a chance to go look at mine. But anyway, we are here. We have a lot to talk about today. But we have a couple things going on over here at Auburn Network with all of our family of stations. First, we have a little giveaway going on this afternoon here on the show. We have a package of tickets for Auburn baseball this weekend. They opened up SEC play against Ole Miss at Plainsman Park starting tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. We have two tickets for Thursday, two tickets for Friday, and two tickets for Saturday's games at Plainsman Park for Auburn baseball against Ole Miss. We're giving away the package here on the line.
Meaning you get Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Six total tickets, two to each game. All you have to do to enter is give us a call here on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. Trevor will take your name and your number down to be entered into the drawing. Immediately following the show, we will randomly select a winner, and I will give you a call. Make sure that you still want them. That's what you entered for, and you can come by the station and pick them up before the weekend series gets underway tomorrow night at Plainsman Park. So again, two tickets to Thursday, Friday, and Saturday's games at Plainsman Park for Auburn baseball versus Ole Miss. All you have to do is call and give us your name and number to be entered into the drawing. We will make the selection immediately following our show at 4 o'clock. So give us a call, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502. And if you want to talk to us on the air, you are more than welcome to, but you do not have to be on air to be into the drawing. So make sure you call in. We have tickets to give away for you for Auburn baseball.
Ticket giveaway bonanza.
That's right. And if you miss out here on the line, the drive from 4 to 6 is also going to have a package of two tickets to Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for Auburn against Ole Miss. So if you miss out here on the line, call in from 4 to 6. You'll be entered into their drawing as well. We also have a drawing that will be going on our social media. So make sure you look at ESPN 106.7 Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Those will go up after the show, maybe during it, if I'm able to get in there and work on it. We will have a contest going on our social media, giving away the exact same thing. So make sure you do that. We have a lot going on. But we have tickets to give away for Auburn baseball. Just give us a call here on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502. Now to get into some sporting news, That's what this show's about? It is, believe it or not.
What?
It is.
I thought it was about weather and ticket giveaways.
Hey, for the first 5 minutes has been, but now we're going to talk about some sports, okay? I think some of the biggest news coming out right now is Baylor's point guard, their leading scorer, their leading point guard, is out for the first weekend of March Madness. Baylor has a matchup against a 16 seed, obviously, in the first round, but then they will have, more than likely, North Carolina in the second round, so their starting point guard is out for the weekend.
Today's letter of the day, everybody, is B for Baylor. Also, B for bad, or as in bad news Bears, or bad news for Baylor. All of the above. Bad injuries for this Baylor team have come down on them in the last month, and the Baylor Bears, I think, are a legit upset candidate in the second round against either North Carolina or Marquette. Both of those are extremely tricky teams to be going up against, especially with the offensive firepower and the talent that those two teams have. Marquette is used to playing schools like Baylor. They have played Providence and Villanova all season long. UConn, they're used to playing schools like Baylor. And Baylor, without their starting point guard now, dropping down, I think, a tier as far as talent is concerned, they're definitely on the same plane as some of those Big East schools, as well as North Carolina. You see what they've done in the last 3 weeks or so, and you talk about how they took down Duke and how well they hung in the ACC tournament up until they lost to Virginia Tech. North Carolina is a team that has a lot of talent, recruits well, is playing their best basketball at this time of year in March. Baycott is somebody who I think can make a difference in that game against Baylor, considering Baylor's MO is not their front court, it is their back court, and that is what has taken a lot of hits as far as injuries are concerned, and as far as play is concerned over the last month. I would not be shocked if North Carolina pulled an upset in the second round if you want to get a little bit spicy. But as we talked about on yesterday's show, as far as percentages are concerned, all time, if you took this on an average year-to-year basis, on average, just 3 1 seeds make it to the Sweet 16 on a year-to-year basis. Now, of course, some years all four of them may make it. Some years less than three may make it. It just depends. I would say most years at least three make the Sweet 16. Some years you do get all four. But when you break it down, it's about 3.41 seeds per NCAA tournament make the Sweet 16. You round down, that's three per tournament, right? Now, you could also round up if you want to, because you do have that 0.4 at the end of it, because you can't have three NCAA tournament teams and then 0.4 of another one, right, making it to the Sweet 16. But the point that I've tried to illustrate is, on average, 3.41 seeds make it to the Sweet 16 on average. And if you kind of want to do a bracket based off of percentages as to how the individual seed lines advance, which will take into account the appropriate amount of upsets that will happen in an NCAA tournament on average, which, once again, sometimes there's more, sometimes there's less, but if you go with a bracket that's going to feature a normal amount of upsets, a one seed may not be in the Sweet 16 come the second weekend. And if you're looking for an attractive candidate to send out, we talked about this yesterday, Baylor would be that candidate considering the injuries, and they probably are the weakest one seed on that one line.
Well, we picked yesterday. You asked me that question. What team, as a one seed, would you choose to not make the Sweet 16 because of the average you just talked about? And I said it had to be one of the Big 12 teams, either Baylor or Kansas. But this another injury for the Baylor Bears would definitely be my pick now for them to not make the Sweet 16 if I had to choose. Baylor's already coming into this with injury problems, and now their starting point guard is going to be out for the weekend. So a max of two games, could be one if they lose the first round. You never know. But with that being said, Baylor's still a good team, but they are a shell of what they could be and what their potential is because of injury. And you hate to see it for a Baylor team that, if completely healthy, would be a legitimate Final Four contender and a legitimate national championship threat. But with this extra injury, it's going to be tough for them to make it past the second round, because either North Carolina or Marquette, like you talked about, those are both extremely well-respected programs, two teams that can make a run in March. I like North Carolina to be that team over Marquette. But again, you never know how the first round's going to go. And Baylor having injury issues like they do. Not saying they can't win their first and second round games, because they definitely still can, but their shots at making a Final Four have definitely dropped with the injury problems that they have on this basketball team.
Granted, didn't you say the point guard in question would be back by the second weekend?
Yes, he's just out the first weekend. So if Baylor can survive the first round and the second round without him, then he will be coming back and they'll be right back where they were. Obviously, they still have some injury problems, but if they can survive the first weekend, I don't know if they play Friday, Sunday, or Thursday, Saturday. I don't remember, but if they survive that, he'll be back. So it's a tough test for Baylor, but they can still do it. And if they can survive, then they still have a legitimate chance to make a run.
I still like Kentucky or Purdue out of the region more than even a 100% Baylor, which they're not going to fully be at any point here moving forward. They're still going to be dealing with various negative factors that are going to prevent them from being at 100%, whether it be chemistry, trying to get guys back, guys being hurt and whatnot. But I like Kentucky and Purdue more than Baylor, whoever comes out of the bottom half of the Eastern region, which you can make the argument for either. I think Purdue is the ideal type of matchup to knock out Kentucky in the Sweet 16 because of that front court of Zach Eddy and Trevion Williams. Those two sandwiching Oscar Tshiebwe, I think, can really limit what he does in that game. I think the Purdue front court, I definitely would take the Purdue front court over the Kentucky front court with Oscar Tshiebwe. And that's nothing against Oscar Tshiebwe. It's simply a numbers game. You've got two guys in the front court for Purdue that are extremely productive, are large, beefy individuals. One of them 7'4" and Zach Eddy. That's going to be really hard for Oscar Tshiebwe to bang with, and we've seen that at different times this year. Then it comes down to which team is going to be able to get more production out of their backcourt. And I don't know if you've heard of an individual named Ivy for Purdue out of the backcourt, but he's averaging 17 points per game, and he's one of the best guards in the entire country. And I think he alone can help get more production out of the Purdue backcourt than the Kentucky backcourt. But likewise, you could take the same argument that I made about the Purdue frontcourt over the Kentucky frontcourt and say, well, there are simply more dudes, more scoring threats in the Kentucky backcourt than the Purdue backcourt. And it really does set the stage for a 50-50 matchup. I really do think what it comes down to in that game between Purdue and Kentucky, the potential Sweet 16 matchup, if we are blessed enough to get that, because I think it would be one of the best games of the entire tournament. If we do end up getting that matchup, the winner will be the team who got the most out of their guards. And that's not just a cliche talking about tournament time. I think that's legit true for that specific matchup. Front court center teams can advance beyond a Sweet 16. But at the end of the day, guard play is going to help you win a championship. I think that holds true. Kentucky relies a lot on Oscar Tshiebwe. Purdue relies a lot on Trevion Williams and Zach Eddy. At the end of the day, the difference here after those two negate each other is who is going to get the most out of their guards. Kentucky maybe has more scoring threats out of the backcourt, but Purdue probably has the best. Not probably, they do. They have the best scoring threat probably on the entire floor between Purdue and Kentucky in that game.
And when you watch Kentucky's point guards and their guards in general play, yes, they've played at an extremely high level at times, but then also they've played at an extremely low level at times. They've also had injury problems at times. And it's kind of like breaking down Auburn. Like, what Kentucky backcourt are you going to get when they step on the floor and play Purdue? And Purdue has the guards to balance them out. And then also, I think the battle is going to be won in the front court by Purdue. I think they're just going to over-dominate Kentucky. If we get to that point, both teams would still have to make the Sweet 16. But if we get that matchup, which I predict that we will, Purdue's front court is going to dominate Oscar Tshiebwe and Kentucky's front court. Just break down the film. When Oscar Tshiebwe is matched up against anybody,
just look at this past weekend against Tennessee.
When he is matched up against anybody with any type of size, height, or weight, he gets bullied and he gets bodied and gets outmatched most of the time. And most of the time he gets outplayed as well, which means he is completely irrelevant in the game. Yeah, he still may have a double-double, but the other guy's going to have just as much of a double-double, if not more. So Oscar Tshiebwe's impact on this Kentucky team when he is matched up against somebody as big or bigger than him, it's almost irrelevant. And Kentucky can't afford to have Oscar Tshiebwe be irrelevant when it comes to a basketball game. They rely on him too much to grab the boards and score. And I think you could see Kentucky get in some serious foul trouble against Purdue Don't know off the top of my head how Purdue shoots the free throw. I'm sure it's probably pretty solid, but that would be my pick. And I do. I have Purdue winning in the Sweet 16 against Kentucky. I think that is Kentucky's kryptonite. That is the one team Kentucky does not want to see in this tournament. It's Purdue. And I just don't see how they would be able to beat them unless the guards play out of their minds. If they do, Kentucky could win. But looking at it on paper, I like Purdue to beat Kentucky in the Sweet 16.
I actually like Kentucky to beat Purdue for the reason that I pointed out a second ago about how I think they have more scoring threats. They may not have the best scoring threat, but I think that they have more scoring threats out of the backcourt, whether it's Davion Mintz or Kellen Grady. And then, of course, we know about the two great guards in Sevier Wheeler and Ty Washington. And I know we're not minimizing either of these teams. You make it to the Sweet 16, you're a great basketball team. And you've got a lot of different playmakers that you can go to. I still think so much is focused on Ivy for Purdue, and he's been phenomenal, and I think that's a big reason. I was looking at this, you know, kind of 100 feet above, looking at this surface level, looking at this from the top and kind of breaking down the matchups and whatnot, and it broke both of my brackets. I have Kentucky advancing to the Elite Eight because I do think at the end of the day there are more scoring threats that they can go to, maybe even when Oscar Tshiebwe is taken out of the game. It's going to take Trevion Williams and Zach Eddy, both of them, to negate Oscar Tshiebwe, which is going to negate a little bit of their impact and what they do for Purdue. Then it's going to come down to a lot of the emphasis is going to be put down on Ivy, which is exactly what happened this past Big Ten championship against Iowa. And guess who won? Iowa won, and I think that comes down to Iowa has a lot more scoring threats all across the floor, especially out of their backcourt, especially in the ability to knock down threes. This Kentucky team is one of the best offensive teams in the country, and when you get to the Sweet 16, when you get to the Elite Eight, everybody can play defense. And that's why when you're national champions, when you look at over the last six, seven national champions, the reason why they're all elite-tier offensive efficiency teams, that's why they're all in the elite tier of offensive efficiency, is because it takes those teams to get past the great defenses that you're going to run into in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. I like Kentucky's offense a lot more than Purdue's, and that's why they are one of my most confident picks to make it all the way to the Elite Eight.
What are the chances that we don't get that matchup in the Sweet 16, that Purdue or Kentucky gets tripped up before then?
I actually think there's a fair shot at that. Kentucky isn't my most confident pick to make the Elite Eight. I have somebody else in mind there, and we can talk about that later. But to your question, you look at a couple teams that could be bracket busters, if you will. Your quote, bracket busters. Virginia Tech is a team that a lot of people like right now because of how hot they're playing. I still don't trust them because the ACC was an absolute cesspool this year and wasn't good at all. I don't trust them just because you look at the back end of their schedule. They were beating teams like Pittsburgh twice. They were beating teams like Clemson. They weren't playing good teams in the ACC. And if you extrapolated those teams and put those teams into other conferences, those teams would have been even worse than what they already were in the ACC, which was down bad this year. Let's just be real. I don't trust this Virginia Tech team a whole bunch to go to the Elite Eight, but I know a lot of people like them. I know a lot of people like this team to maybe be a bit of a Cinderella run because they're playing hot, but I think that gets blown out of proportion a little bit too much when you talk about the NCAA tournament, someone riding a hot hand in. Yeah, it worked for the ACC tournament, but is that hot hand going to continue into the NCAA tournament? And I think you can look at last night's game between Indiana and Wyoming, and I know Indiana won, but I don't think Indiana played well. Did their hot hand from the Big Ten tournament continue into the NCAA tournament? No, I don't think it did at all. And I think you can make the same point about Wyoming, who made the Mountain West tournament championship. I think you can say the same thing about them, that they didn't continue their good form of play. It's a whole different ballgame, and you've got to create the fire over again in the NCAA tournament. And I think Virginia Tech will get past Texas. I do have them winning that matchup in both of my brackets. I think it's going to be a great ball game, and too many people are sharpieing that in with confidence. I think Texas is still a good basketball team. Battle tested, has played in a really difficult conference in the Big 12. They've seen a lot scarier things than Virginia Tech, let me tell you. I wouldn't be shocked if Virginia Tech finds that three-point stroke. Maybe they do go on a little bit of a run. Maybe they do knock out of Purdue. And then in the bottom half, another bracket buster, if you will, that a lot of people like, Murray State. But I do, at the end of the day, in both of my brackets, have Purdue and Kentucky in the Sweet 16 because I think Virginia Tech's going to have a hard time sustaining the level of play that they've had. And I think Murray State, you look at their body of work this year, they have not had to play with consistency teams that sport the athleticism that a Kentucky has. And the one game that we did see that in the non-conference for Murray State, which granted was 2 months ago, it was against Auburn. And they didn't match up well with Auburn at all. Still lost by 13, and Auburn, I don't think, played their best game that day. Auburn was...
Shocker.
Did Auburn have Bruce Pearl that day? That was Bruce Pearl's first game back from the suspension. But that was the first game that Al Flanagan came back. They were still trying to find a way to work him into the mix. I don't think that was Auburn's best or 100% day, right? And I thought Murray State just didn't look like they had the same type of athletes. And that makes sense. They're out of the Ohio Valley Conference, right? And that's going to show against a team like Kentucky. And so I don't have either of those teams getting past the round of 32, but I do think they win their first round matchups against Texas and San Francisco, respectively.
I agree. I think both of those teams can win their first round game, but don't write them in past the second round, I don't think. I don't think they will have the firepower, Virginia Tech and Murray State, respectively, to beat their round of 32.
Kentucky and Purdue are national championship contenders. Both of them are national championship contenders,
oh,
and
no
I don't
doubt.
See them going down before the Sweet 16. They're going to have to take each other out.
Whoever wins that Sweet 16 matchup will win it all.
I agree 100%. Maybe not winning the national championship, but I think they'll win the region. I know that's what you meant. They'll win the entire region.
That's what
they'll
I meant.
Win the
yeah.
East. I know
yeah.
you're having a little bit of issues
yeah,
over there.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I had to get a drink. No, whoever wins that Sweet 16 game between Kentucky and Purdue will win the region. That's what I mean. Let's take a break here on the line. Give us a call. We've got baseball tickets to give away. Auburn versus Ole Miss. Two tickets for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It's a package deal. Give us a call and give us your name and number to be entered into the drawing. It will end at 4 o'clock when we go off the air, so make sure you give us a call, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. Let's take a break. You're listening to On the Line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Wednesday edition of the show. Just a few more minutes before we head to the national 2:30 break, but give us a call. If you want to come on the air, talk to us about anything you've got going on in the sporting world, have an opinion about something, a prediction for the tournament, we want to hear from you. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, everybody. Do you want to win $1 million.
$1 million?
Well, make the perfect picks for our March Mayhem contest, and you'll have a chance to win just that. Plus, even if you don't win the million, there's a 55-inch smart TV up for grabs, and it could be yours. It's not a dumb TV. It's a smart TV. It can be yours if you fill out the top bracket on our contest page. To register, go to ESPNAU.com. Deadline is tomorrow at 11 a.m. Basketball Mayhem is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic, Pepsi Buffalo Rock, and the 19th Hole Restaurant and Sports Bar. Once again, the Basketball Mayhem Contest. $1 million if you make the perfect picks, or if you don't, just the best bracket on our contest page. 55-inch smart TV up for grabs.
Yeah, make sure you go enter that. Again, the deadline is 11 a.m. tomorrow, as that will be the first game of the NCAA tournament. Also going on, like I said before the break, we have Auburn baseball tickets to give away for this weekend. Auburn opens up SEC play with the number one team in the country, the Ole Miss Rebels. We have two games for tomorrow's opener on Thursday at 6 o'clock, two games for Friday, and two games for Saturday. It is a six-ticket package for the weekend. All you have to do is call in, give us your name and number. You will be entered for the drawing. We'll make the selection immediately following our show at 4. So give us a call to be entered to win a weekend package at Plainsman Park for Auburn baseball. Give us a call here on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. You can talk to us on the air or just give us a call to enter the drawing, whatever you want to do. But make sure you give us a call as we are giving those away today. Well, Noah, just a minute or two before we head to the break, we've been talking about our upset teams that we like. Maybe I don't really see a whole lot of teams making a big major run. I think this is going to be a tournament where in the first and maybe second, really just the first rounds, okay, you're going to see a lot of upsets. in the first round. I think that's going to go down. But I think, as we see in most tournaments, but this year especially, once we get into some of the deeper rounds, it's going to be the top four seeds of teams that make their legitimate runs. Maybe a five seed or two that we could see, maybe like an Iowa that could come in and make a little run. But the first round, I predict it will be insanity. I think it's going to be a lot of upsets. But then, ultimately, the top teams are going to reign supreme when it comes down to the end of the day.
I can definitely see that. I could definitely see a lot of carnage on day one, a lot of brackets torn up. You just hope that some of your top seeds aren't the ones caught up in that, and they probably won't be. I think there probably is a little bit of a cliff between,
I would say, the three and then everybody else.
I would say the top three lines, there's a lot of security there in those picks, I would say. But outside of that, you're right. There could be some real carnage, especially on that 13-4 matchup, whether it's Vermont beating Arkansas or Chattanooga beating Illinois. A lot of people like those. South Dakota State and Providence, I could definitely see that happening. I think UCLA is pretty safe from Akron, but the MAC has had a decent history in the NCAA tournament for being able to pull an upset or two. That, I'm sure, will be talked about when UCLA and Akron play on Thursday tomorrow, but I could see that happening. I'm not as psyched about a lot of the five seeds losing. I like a lot of the five seeds against their 12 seeds. The 6-11, believe it or not, the 11-6 upset has happened more times than it hasn't over the last 10 tournaments or so. So I'll be interested to see how that plays out, because there are a lot of 6-11s that I could see happening. Honestly, other than LSU, I wouldn't be shocked if there were three.
I agree. I like the 11-6 and the 13-4 in this tournament. Let's take a break. You're listening to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Garner with you on the Wednesday edition of the show. 30 minutes into hour number one. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We're toll free at 888-382-7502. You can talk to us on the air, or you can enter our contest, as we are giving away Auburn baseball tickets for the weekend. Two tickets for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday is a package deal. All you got to do is call in and give us your name and number. You'll be entered into the drawing. We will pick a winner right after the show. So call in for that. Call in to talk to us, because we want to hear from you. So let's talk a little NFL, my friend, because you came on the air a little upset about your Cleveland Browns imploding on themselves. What's going on? Did you see the post from the one and only Baker Mayfield on Twitter last night?
The Cleveland Frowns are back. Not yet. Not yet. I still like a lot of the roster. I don't like as much as what it looked like going into last season before all the injuries and COVID hit, right? I think going into last season, the Browns had one of the most attractive rosters in the entire league, and that's why they were somewhat of a Super Bowl contender before the year started. And, of course, anybody that knows Cleveland history knew that that was foolish, but even I knew it was foolish. But there's threat as to whether or not Jadeveon Clowney will be back. Then, of course, they make the trade that they did to bring in Chase Winovich, which those are not equitable. That's not equitable. That doesn't make me think, yeah, it's going to be okay if Jadeveon Clowney doesn't come back. You've got Chase Winovich, whose playing time has slipped in New England, versus guy who wreaks havoc on backfields, right? And Jadeveon Clowney and Chase Winovich, that is not an equitable trade-off. And they traded Mack Wilson, who was a decent piece at linebacker, to bring in Chase Winovich. And granted, they probably are looking at depth at that edge outside linebacker position, and I'm okay with that in theory, but you need Jadeveon Clowney to come back. And now hearing news that Austin Hooper has been released, honestly, coming into this year, he's probably my most trusted, especially if Baker Mayfield's still your quarterback, he's the most trusted pass catcher, not just as a tight end, even clumped together with the wide receivers, he's the most trusted pass catcher on the roster that just got cut loose. And it was to save roughly $10 million, which I understand if they're trying to open up some money for certain reasons, if you catch my drift. But I don't want Deshaun Watson to be the quarterback in Cleveland. Not with all this stuff going on.
But that's probably what's happening, because the post that I was referring to, Baker Mayfield posted on Twitter last night.
Yeah, I know.
Basically saying, thanks, Cleveland. because he expects to not be playing there anymore. And that leads me to believe the only guy that's really on the market.
But he wants to be traded to the Colts. So how is that going to play out? And honestly, Baker Mayfield's not going to get to choose where he gets traded to.
No.
And it's going to be quite a shame if he gets traded to the Texans, considering everything that Baker Mayfield has done for the organization in Cleveland. And that's where I'm getting at, right? This is why I don't want Deshaun Watson to be the quarterback. I know he wasn't indicted. I know that they were not able to come up with the evidence for this. I know that. And you're innocent until proven guilty in our judicial system. I get that. But there's still the civil cases going on. You don't know how the NFL is going to handle this, about whether or not he's going to be suspended and for how long, because it's a lot lower bar to clear in the NFL's eye about whether or not you're innocent or guilty, or if they feel like you broke their rules, right? That's a lot less of a bar to clear than it is in our judicial system. So I still don't know if he's going to be playing. I still don't know if he's going to be playing next season or whenever he's back in the league. Also, we don't know 100% what's true in this situation and what's not, and there's so much uncertainty around Deshaun Watson and everything that's gone on. And you're going to bring that guy in over somebody who's literally given everything to Cleveland, loves Cleveland, and has even given his body and has played through an injury. And it's just, and I talked about this a lot during the football season, about how unfair I thought it was for people, even the national media, because the national media is guilty of this. Colin Cowherd, all of those guys are guilty of this. Just absolutely trashing Baker Mayfield. And I'm like, where was this two seasons ago? Where was this when the Browns went to the playoffs and they went 11-5 in the regular season and won a playoff game and hammered the Steelers in the first round, had the Browns in the game against the Chiefs, were very close to knocking off the Chiefs, right? There was a couple things that didn't quite go their way that were out of their hands in that game, and they almost knocked out the Chiefs, right? Ultimately, the team that went on to win the AFC. The Browns were doing great with Mayfield 2 years ago. It's just convenient right now for everyone to leave out that half of his body was injured this year. And I truly mean half of his body, top to bottom, torn labrum in his left shoulder. He had a leg and groin injury. This dude literally hurt his ankle, his groin, and his shoulder all on the left side of his body. You tell me how that's going to work out for a dude to play the quarterback position and him being able to turn his body and whip the ball across his body. They talked about that extensively when we played your team, the Packers, and you saw the three or four interceptions, however many it was, in the Packers game. His body literally could not make those throws. It wasn't decision-making for Baker Mayfield. It was the body failing him. He got his surgery, got his operation done this offseason. Let's give the man the opportunity he deserves, because he has been a major part, if not the main reason, why the Cleveland Browns organization is no longer a dumpster fire like it was before he got there. No other quarterback, a long list of them, more than 20, could do what Baker Mayfield did. And Baker Mayfield came in as a rookie and won six or seven games, however many it was, with all the nonsense that was going on that year. And his head coach even got fired. He had three different offensive coordinators. He had three different head coaches through his first 3 years. This guy's had the deck stacked against him. And you're going to throw all that away for somebody who truly loves the Cleveland organization and has played his heart out for him and doesn't have all of the nonsense circulating around him that Deshaun Watson does? I just think it's incredibly disrespectful, and I think it's a really poor decision. And if the Browns make this decision, I completely 100% could see this colossally backfiring in a huge way. And I just don't think it's the right decision to make.
I'm going to go ahead and say you are probably not the only Browns fan that feels that way.
There's a lot of us that feel like that. Think about how the Browns were in the playoff hunt going to the final 2 weeks of the season with, once again, the entire left half of Baker Mayfield's body being inoperable, right? It could not work.
He's lucky.
And they had him in the playoff hunt.
He's lucky to still be playing football. That man has been injured so bad in so many different places, so many different surgeries, and for him to want to come back and continue to play, not just play football, but play for the Cleveland Browns.
I will contend that if COVID didn't hit half of the Browns roster the week of the Raiders game, the Browns slapped the Raiders and they would have been first in the division going into the last 3 weeks of the season. They played the Packers, and then obviously they had the Bengals and the Steelers down the stretch. They beat the Bengals in the last week of the season, and they still hung with the Steelers in the second to last game of the year and almost beat them when all of their hopes were dashed, right? If they had just won the Raiders game and COVID doesn't hit, I think the Browns are in the playoffs and the Bengals don't even make. You don't get to see Joe Burrow in the playoffs. You don't get to see the special thing that happened with Cincinnati. That doesn't happen. People aren't talking about Joe Burrow taking over the NFL. If COVID doesn't hit the Cleveland Browns, half of the roster with these ridiculous COVID-19 protocol in the NFL, if that doesn't happen, the Browns are in the playoffs. I'm telling you, you can see I'm getting fired up. I think it is an incredibly hasty decision that the Cleveland Browns should not be making, and it could alter the state of the division moving forward.
But COVID did hit the Browns in the Raiders game, and all of that stuff did happen.
But that's out of Baker Mayfield's control. That should not... That you give that guy a pass.
I agree. That's what I'm telling you, brother. Yeah. I agree. All of that stuff did happen. I understand that if it didn't happen, yeah, we're probably not even talking about this situation. But it did happen, okay? But for the Cleveland Browns, you got to let that go. You got to give this man another shot because, A...
Brian Harsin is the because. Yeah. He won his embattled situation. Baker Mayfield can be the embattled quarterback that wins in Cleveland.
Exactly. And all of those things happened, but yet, and all of that happened, all of the injuries have happened to Baker Mayfield, all of the Cleveland Browns shenanigans have happened, but yet, who's the one guy that still wants to come back and play for the Cleveland Browns?
Half of the offensive line was hurt last year. Both of the running backs got injured for at least 4-week period stints. Odell Beckham got hurt again. Jarvis, go and look at his social media about all the injuries that he had last year. At one point, all that the Cleveland Browns could throw to were tight ends. And by the way, we just cut one of those guys. I mean, the Browns literally like, we got things going right, guys. Let's set it on fire.
But to go back on my point, who is the one guy that still wants to come back and play for the Browns? It's Baker Mayfield. He wants to come back. Is he the greatest quarterback in the league? No.
He's a top 15 quarterback, though.
I was going to say, is he a top 10? No.
No, he's a top 15 quarterback,
though. You can make the argument he's a top 15 quarterback.
He definitely is.
And he is a guy that wants to come and play for your franchise, has done things that not many other quarterbacks could have done in Cleveland, because let's be honest, they've been a laughingstock the last 20 years. Until, you know, a couple of years ago with here and there success, but he still wants to come back and play for this team. And here's my important question. He made the post on social media because he knows that he's not going to be playing in Cleveland
anymore. I feel
like
he got sent home from The Bachelor. That's the vibe I get from all this.
Exactly. He's gone, and he knows that. Cleveland, the organization knows it. Baker knows it. The fans know it because of the quote-unquote assumption, but it's obviously in the works to bring Deshaun Watson into the Cleveland Browns to be their starting quarterback. I asked this question. What are you going to get at this point in both of their careers? What are you going to get from Deshaun Watson that you cannot get from Baker Mayfield? Because is Deshaun Watson more athletic? Yes. At this point, yes. But he has not played in a while. He's also been hurt himself. And he has all these allegation things going on. I know legally it's aside.
I think the biggest question with Deshaun Watson is he going to be available to play? Because if he is available to play, I think he's a top 7 quarterback in the NFL.
And that's what I was going to hit on. The legal side of it is done, but the NFL still has their part to come in and discipline Deshaun Watson. But he's not going to have the want and the heart to play in Cleveland, dude. Nobody, let's be real. 99% of players that go to the league, they do not want to go to Cleveland, okay? Let's just be real. I lived in Ohio, man.
Odell and Jarvis did.
I lived in Ohio.
Jadeveon Clowney did.
You don't want to go to Cleveland. I'm going to be real. I
get that, but players have been excited to play there over the last couple of years because of
all
what's
the
been happening.
Yes,
right.
Look
and
at
I
all
think
the
Baker Mayfield's been a big part of that.
I agree. And so what are you going to get from Deshaun Watson that is different slash better than what you have with Baker Mayfield? I don't see it. Unless
better quarterback
playing,
play.
You may get better quarterback play, but you may not.
When both of them are fully healthy, Deshaun Watson, it's not even close, and I will admit this, when both of them are fully healthy and are available to play, half of Baker Mayfield's body is operational here, right? Even when both of them are healthy, it's not even close. Deshaun Watson's a much better quarterback.
But will the results be any different?
Will the wins and losses? Okay, come on, man. They went 11-5 and went to the playoffs 2 years ago. They barely missed the playoffs this year. The Browns are finding ways to win games even with half their roster hurt. The roster's good. That gone are those days. I understand the whole laughingstock, Cleveland frowns nonsense. I get that. Okay, but that's out of the question now. The roster's there. The roster's talented. They've got dudes. That's gone are the days of them
having Deshaun Kizer as their quarterback and whatnot. If you get Deshaun Watson as your quarterback, I do think they win games. But I'm more talking about this from the lens of the social and the ramifications of all of the stuff surrounding Deshaun Watson.
But that plays into it. That's what I'm saying. Like, you may bring this guy in.
I think if he plays, he wins. It's the stuff outside of whether or not he's going to be able to play or not, and whether or not, I heard Lewis Riddick talking about this on ESPN the other day, how does the organization as a whole feel about this? Top to bottom, everybody working inside the organization, he was talking about how this isn't a GM decision, this is an owner decision, right? And if you make this decision, you have to look at what the cultural or the organizational impacts of this are. And sometimes you don't want to even fool with that. You don't even want to try and make a decision like that. If he plays, I think he wins football games. But the question is, do you even want to get to that point because of all the other stuff that could come of it?
I don't think this is the move, man. I'm just going to be really honest.
I don't think it's the move either. I'm not defending it. I'm mad about it. I don't want Cleveland to go after Deshaun Watson one bit.
But when I hear, and it's not official, Deshaun Watson has not gone to the Browns yet, but it seems to be coming. When I hear that move,
or they're trying to get their assets in order to be able to make a trade.
Yes.
Obviously, they've got to get the money in the right place to be able to take on that contract, and that may be why they're moving a guy like Austin Hooper off the roster.
But when I hear that and I see that and I think about that, nothing of that says, wow, the Browns are going to be legit. That doesn't cross my mind. I'm like, well, I mean, cool. They got another quarterback.
That's because you're biased against the Browns.
I'm not.
That's because you're still living in 10 years ago.
I'm not, but it's okay.
Because Baker Mayfield as their quarterback, you think they're for real?
No.
See, there you go. There's the bias behind that.
It's not bias. I've seen it. The Browns has, years ago, the Browns had more talent than anybody in the entire league. I understand they had some issues and some injuries and all that, but they've still never been able to put it together. And now they're playing in, still playing in the AFC North. That's going to be one of the toughest divisions in football, competitive-wise, because all four teams, we've talked about this, all four teams are going to be a legitimate playoff threat.
Roster's loaded up. It's juiced up. They went 11-5 2 years ago. They barely missed the playoffs this year. They finished third in the division, right above the Ravens, in, once again, a year where half of the roster was hurt. At times, COVID hit it. All that happened. All that's out of the Browns' control.
But even when
they stay healthy, they are going to be a legit contender in the AFC North.
Even when they had a healthy roster and all that talent, they still didn't do anything with it.
What are you talking about? They won a playoff game. They beat the division champion in the Pittsburgh Steelers that year.
Yeah. I mean, sure. But over a long term, it's not going to happen.
It's only been 2 years since they've rebuilt the roster. We're going into year three right now.
Until I see it, I don't believe it. And I may be completely wrong.
Who do you trust more, the Chargers or the Browns?
It's a good question.
I think part of it's the portion of the country that you're from and how people talk about the Browns in your state.
I don't like the Bengals either.
But that is a pro Cincinnati state. But I bring up the Chargers because you talk about talent and how many players they've had. When have they ever done anything with it?
They haven't.
Right?
It's the same situation. It'd be the same situation if we're talking about them.
But people have more faith in the Los Angeles Chargers. And I'm just going to go ahead and tell you right now, our perception of these teams and what they've done historically, their history and all that, what the Browns did 10 years ago, absolutely has no bearing on what they will do today. What the Chargers have done over the last 20 years absolutely has no bearing on what they will do next year.
And that's
totally
fine.
It has no bearing whatsoever.
But my opinion on the Chargers would be the exact same. If we were talking about this Deshaun Watson going to the Chargers, I would say, that doesn't surprise me. That doesn't make me, uh-oh, here come the Chargers. My mindset's the exact same because neither one of them, I don't think, are going to be competing at the highest level in the NFL. I just don't see it. Let's take a break. We'll wrap up hour number one here on the line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Wednesday edition of the show. Just a few more minutes before we get out of here for hour number one, but stick around because at 3 o'clock we'll be right back here for hour number two of On the Line. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. Anything on your mind going on in the sporting world, a lot of college basketball news, some baseball news. Me and Noah just had an argument about the Cleveland Browns for the last 15 minutes.
It was a good discussion.
Anything that's on your mind.
We agreed until you talk about the history of Cleveland and why you think they'll never do anything because of it. That
no.
is a man who has little faith in people being able to change.
Whatever.
It's the truth. That's why I said whatever.
If you want to give us a call about anything on your mind, we want to hear from you. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Also, If you want to give us a call and enter our Auburn baseball ticket giveaway, we have two tickets for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday as Auburn opens up SEC play against the number one team, Ole Miss, this weekend at Plainsman Park. It is a package deal. You call, get your name in the drawing after the show at 4 o'clock. We'll make a selection and give you a call. You can win two tickets to Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for a weekend of Auburn baseball at Plainsman Park. Just give us a call, give us your name and number, and let us know if you're interested in joining in the contest. We will pick a winner and let you know immediately following the show. So give us a call. Again, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. And I was scrolling through Twitter during the break. Okay,
oh, don't do that.
And and Freddie Freeman of the Atlanta Braves.
No, he's not of the Atlanta Braves right now. He's just Freddie Freeman of Freddie Freeman.
Exactly. Okay. Freddie Freeman, the former Atlanta Brave, officially made his...
Well, he's not former yet, but... Go for it.
What is he? What is it? If he ain't a Brave, but
he's
not
Freddie
a
Freeman of Freddie Freeman. That's what he is right now. All could be a Brave. Could whatever. Still not be a Brave.
But he officially made his goodbye farewell post to Atlanta Braves.
Okay, well,
fans.
Now he's a former Atlanta Brave.
If you let me talk, I was trying to tell you that, bro. Nah, I'm just messing with you. Nah, he did. He made his farewell post to Atlanta, you know. Forever champions. We are... You know, he was happy of his time in Atlanta. His family's thankful for Atlanta, all that type of thing. But that is the writing on the wall. And, writing on the wall, it is over the Freddie Freeman era in Atlanta as the Braves are probably not going to re-sign him, obviously. Your thoughts on Freddie Freeman leaving Atlanta?
The move for Matt Olson made sense, especially when you look at his hit chart. Where all of his home runs go, especially in a park like Truist. But beyond that, it was a smart move. Matt Olson's excited to come back to Atlanta. I believe he's a Georgia native, so it works. A little bit younger than Freddie Freeman. I also understand the sentiment that you want to bring a guy like Freddie Freeman back, especially as a mentor to the young folks, and that he embodies a lot of the Atlanta culture inside that organization. I get that. Obviously, if the Braves are, I don't want to say penny pinchers, but the Braves definitely are more financially frugal than most organizations. And if you don't hit their price, then they're not going to bring you back. And they found a way to find somebody else who could get that production at a better price. So from a financial decision, I think they made a good move, but you hate to see him go.
I don't think this is on the Braves. I think this is more on Freddie Freeman wanting more money than what the Braves wanted. He deserves it, but the Braves didn't want to pay it. That's it for hour number one. We'll be back for hour number two. You're listening to On the Line.
You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Wednesday edition of the show. Hour number two is officially underway here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. If you missed any of hour number one, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. It'll be uploaded immediately following the show at 4 o'clock. We have a lot going on here at Auburn Network and our family of stations. Today here on the Line and on the next show, The Drive, we are giving away a set of weekend tickets for Auburn baseball as they open up SEC play against Ole Miss, the number one team in the country. We have a set of two tickets for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. All you got to do is call in, give us your name and number, and we will pick a random winner after the show. You will win all six tickets, two for Thursday, two for Friday, and two for Saturday. So give us a call at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. We'll pick a winner at 4 o'clock and contact you. You can come by and pick up your tickets. Also, if you want to come on air and talk to us about anything going on in the sporting world, we want to hear from you. Our number is, again, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Noah, it's been a good first hour. We got a lot to talk about here in hour number two.
That's right, and let's head to the phone lines now. We've got Shane on the line with us. 334-321-1390 is the number to call. Shane, what's up, my man?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Doing real well. How are you?
Good, good. Just trying to get your opinions on basketball. We went through a stretch where we won, I don't know, what it was like 20 in a row, and then like towards the end, we were just – I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was just this the style of play that we have. Maybe it wears you out towards the end, and maybe that this rest, maybe that'll rejuvenate some guys and maybe get back to that, you know, how we were in the middle of the season. I don't see why we wouldn't be able to, with the talent that we have, make it to Elite Eight or Final Four. I see that it's possible either way, is what I'm saying.
I think Auburn's defense is going to get them all the way to the Elite Eight. The question is where the offense is at, how well they're shooting the basketball at that time, or if they figure any of that out. To answer your question about what's going wrong with them, I just think the guard play is so inconsistent that when they're playing well, Auburn is honestly borderline unbeatable. There are very few teams that I would think could take Auburn when Auburn's guards are playing well, because we know the front court's going to play well. It comes down to whether or not the guards play well. And Auburn's playing a few teams in their region that know how to defend. They USC in the second round, if they do end up getting USC, they are a great defensive team. LSU and Wisconsin, also great defensive teams in their own right. So I think Auburn's got a relatively difficult bracket in the Midwest to try and advance through. But I also think a lot of those teams are not the best from an offensive standpoint either. And I think at the end of the day, Auburn's defense is going to help play them into the Elite Eight, like you said. I think without a doubt, in both of my brackets, I've got Auburn in the Elite Eight. The question about Auburn being able to make it to a Final Four or a national championship is going to come down to their guard play at that point. Because when you reach the Sweet 16, when you reach the Elite Eight, everybody can play defense. That's a common denominator. It comes down to who can find the buckets in those crucial moments. And Auburn's guards, over the last 9 games, there's a reason why Auburn's been 5-4 over that stretch, because they can't. And not that they can't, but they're not.
Yeah, at the same time, you know, I've seen games where Jabari and Wes and Kessler have both just like been dominant, and that's what they're going to need to have for every game that they play, is those two guys for sure, just like come out and say, you know, these are our last games, we're going to go out with a bang and give it all they got. And if that is the case, if I see that energy from those two dudes, you know, I don't see how we're going to get beat, even if we have, you know, a good guard play. If you're not going to get to the rim, unless you're going to, you just light us up by three, you're not going to get to the bucket with Kessler. And if Jabari is on fire, it doesn't matter where the dude is. He's going to get that bucket.
I agree with that. I just think we've also seen a couple of games, too, when both of those guys have played well and Auburn still lost. Like the Texas A&M game, I mean, both of those guys had great performances. They were Auburn's two leading scorers in the game. Had good performances. I actually think it's better when Jabari only scores like 15 and everybody else is helping out and chipping in, and you get more of a balanced effort. And I think Bruce Pearl would agree with that thought too, because he said that in times past. And so I think it's better if everybody's playing well. I get your point though. Those two guys, when they're dominant, Auburn's going to have a chance to win every ball game because they have those two players. But I do think Auburn, at the end of the day, once you get to the Elite Eight, most teams have a guy like that, and Auburn's going to need multiple players to chip in. Shane, we appreciate the call, my man.
Thanks, guys.
War Eagle to you as well. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, I agree. Look, and he made the point of when Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler play good for Auburn, he says that Shane was saying that he doesn't see Auburn being able to be beat, and your response was going to be my response as well. We've seen times where even when Walker and Jabari,
I think Jabari's best game is when Auburn does get beat.
Exactly.
Because it was needed.
Exactly.
I think Auburn's at a better place when it's not needed.
Jabari does not need to go off for 25, 30 points. That's not how Auburn's going to win, especially in the tournament. And again, like you said, we've seen times where Walker and Jabari both had outstanding games, but the such bad play from the guards brought it down. And that just shows the impact of what the guards mean on a tournament team in March. And so, does Auburn need Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith to play good? Yeah, absolutely. I agree with Shane on that. They've got to play good, but it has to be paired with good guard play. It doesn't have to be great guard play. It just has to be good. You can't have double-digit turnovers from your primary ball handlers. You can't have 2-for-30 shooting from your guards. You've got to have just good guard play, because the front court is good enough to carry this team all the way to the national championship, but the guards have got to back them up. Just on a good level, does not have to be great.
I agree with that. They've got to be efficient, not turning the basketball over, getting into good places on the floor where they can kick out, make the right pass. You've got to make the right pass, but you've also got to make the right shot, too. There is a time and a place to shoot the basketball, and there's a time and a place to pass the basketball. And too many times, I think, they're doing one when they should have been doing the other. And that includes, sometimes they should be shooting the basketball instead of making an extra pass or being a little reluctant to pull the trigger. It's going to come down to their guards making the right decisions and making them at the right times. And unfortunately, over the last 9 games, I don't think we've seen them do that, especially in the losses, more times than not, right? I think they have made a lot of poor decisions that really made me question them in late game situations as well. It just doesn't look pretty every single time in a late game situation. At the end of the day, it's going to come down to Auburn's guards. I'm not saying that Auburn's guards need to go for 12 or 14 points or something like that, every single one of them. I'm just saying I need those guys not turning the basketball over, making good passes, setting up your teammates for good shots. And then also, if you've got a good shot, take it and make it. At the end of the day, you got to make it. But I'm tired of all these, you know, size up, dribble move, three-point step back, jump shots, you know, whatever you want to call it. I'm tired of them dribbling between their legs for 5 seconds and then pulling up on a step back three. I think you got to get more out of the guards from a downhill perspective to be able to break down some of these defenses, because how these teams are playing Auburn right now, they are packing it in and they are making them shoot. And more times than not, they are missing by a lot, too. I mean, I've seen so many air balls from these guards over the last couple of weeks, it's like, man, your shot's broke. You need to stop. You need to stop.
I understand shooters shoot, but right now they're not even considered shooters, because just look how Texas A&M played Auburn in the SEC tournament. They stacked 5 inside the paint, and they dared Auburn to shoot. Jabari Smith, they dared Auburn to shoot. And you know what? They did.
And something else, and that makes it a lot easier to guard Jabari Smith when you're daring everybody else, because you can assert yourself on Jabari Smith and make his shots a little bit more difficult. And granted, you look at him in the SEC tournament, what he went like 6-for-15 or something like that. That's not an overly efficient offensive performance. By that, by three, what is that? 2/5? So he shot 40% from the field. It's not great.
That's 3/5.
Is it? 6-for-15 divided by 3, it's 2/5.
That is 40%. Yeah, you're right.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, it's not bad though.
It's not good.
It's better than 0-for-15 or whatever.
It's good if you're shooting 40% from three. I don't think it's good if you're a forward at 6'10" shooting 40% from the field. I think that you should be shooting around 50% for an efficient offensive performance. 40% is average, I think. 40%. If your team shot, so let me put this in the lens. If Auburn shot 40%, would you think they shot the basketball well that day?
From the field?
Yeah, 40% from the field.
Not bad.
40% in basketball, in college basketball, is going to rank you outside the top 200. And field goal percentage.
But in one game, I would expect this Auburn team to do it. Is that what you were asking me?
No, I'm saying that, like, if Auburn shot 40% from the field, that's not good.
I misunderstood your question. Yeah. I took that question as, would you expect Auburn to shoot 40%, whatever? No. If they shoot 40% as a team, no, you're going to lose.
It's like Tennessee shot 41% in conference play, and that ranked 14th in the SEC.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not good. That's not a place that you want to live at. So I would even argue that volume for Jabari Smith isn't exactly where you want to go. You want the right kind of volume for all of these players. And I think Auburn's guards right now, the reason why things are so bad is because they're unable to get downhill. It seems like, and I had someone point this out to me the other day, and I thought this was really interesting. And this guy knows a lot about basketball, played a lot of basketball, you know, through the high school ranks in North Carolina. If you played high school basketball in North Carolina, you know some basketball. The guy's a hooper, okay, and he understands the game. And I really trust his opinion. So, and if you trust me, then you can trust this opinion. But he was breaking down some of the guards and how he notices when Katie Johnson's on the left wing. Watch for this. He doesn't like to drive. the left wing is where KD Johnson takes a lot of his step back threes, and they're giving him the lane. They're giving him the ability to drive to the bucket and go get a layup. He may not be as comfortable with his left hand driving. That's just one player. I think Wendell Green has no ability whatsoever, because of his size, has no ability whatsoever to get around when somebody hedges on the ball screens. When he's doubled off the screen, he's too short to make the pass over the top of it.
And they trap him,
and he can't dribble around it. And now all of a sudden, that motion in the offense, that action in the offense is completely negated. And then I think you can say the same thing for Zepp Jasper. I think Zepp should be a little bit more aggressive from a shooting standpoint, because that may open some things up for the others. But Zepp is in the same boat. He's not the biggest guard in the world either. And there's been a couple of performances recently where he's only got like one assist to one turnover. And that's not where you want your starting point guard, who's got 28 minutes logged or 20 minutes logged. That's not where you want it to be at. That's not productive. There's just not a whole lot of production going on right now from this group. And it's because they have not learned how to overcome how teams are guarding them right now, and they're not getting downhill.
So to go back on your Jabari point, and then I'll get into the guards more. Yes, Jabari only shot 40% from the field in the SEC tournament, but the rest of the team should be able to back him up, and he should not have to be our best shooter and best scorer night in and night out. I understand he's the best player on the team. He may be one of the best players in college basketball. You expect him to be able to shoot better than 40%, especially with his stroke, but he's not going to be able to do that every single game, and especially in the first game of the SEC tournament.
It should not get to the point where he has to take 20 shots.
Exactly.
It should not get to that point. But
exactly.
His field goal percentage should be better than 40%.
I agree.
Regardless.
I agree. But you can't expect it to be 50 and 60% night in and night out. I understand he can shoot really well, but look at the jumpers he takes. I mean, the dude
They're
is
all
on his grill.
Exactly. And the reason for that is because the other guys aren't backing him up. And
exactly.
I think if his volume goes down, his shot percentage goes up. And that's because he's getting better looks, because there's other guys doing things. That's why I think it's important, going back to Shane's call, that's why I think it's important that Auburn gets everybody involved and that it's balanced. But right now, this team's in their heads. What really scared me about the Texas A&M game was the facial expressions of the players. If you were watching on TV, I don't know if you could really see this if you're inside a stadium, right, because of how far away that you are. But if you're watching it on the TV and you're seeing these guys after miss after miss after miss, and the expression on their face, they're exerting so much energy and effort. Effort's not a problem, I don't think, in that A&M game. I don't think effort was the issue. Effort in some games from a rebounding standpoint, like the Tennessee and Mississippi State game, that's effort, right? I thought they played with effort against South Carolina. I thought they played with effort against Texas A&M in the last two games. So I don't think it's an effort issue. Truly, these guys are trying so hard, and then you can see on their face that they don't know what's going on. Like, they don't know why. Devin Cambridge doesn't know why his open three-point jump shot's not going to drop. KD Johnson doesn't know why he's missing bunnies at the rim. All of these guys don't know why they're missing these shots and why they're not getting this foul called or that. And it looked like sheer helplessness. I'm going to be real. They literally, like, they couldn't buy one. They looked like they were drowning.
And that's
it really looked like that.
That's got to change. I mean, you got to.
But how does that just change?
Exactly. Exactly. And that is what I've been preaching for almost 2 months now, man. I hate it. I hate it because the talent on this team is unbelievable. Probably some of the most talent Auburn has ever had on a full basketball team, okay? But that's the exact problem. How does it change? I don't see how it does. I hope it does. Because now, truly, it's a whole brand new season. The regular season, SEC tournament, whatever, none of that matters anymore. You've got six games you have to win in a row to win a national championship. Does Auburn be able to turn all of their problems around and become the great team that we know they can be? Who knows? We're about to find out. Auburn plays at 11:40 a.m. Central Time against Jacksonville State on Friday morning. We're about to find out. They're going to come out slow because that's what they do. I would not be shocked if Auburn gets down by 8 or 10 points in that first half against Jacksonville State. Why? Because that's what they do. But this team has the potential to make a deep run in March. And so when you're filling out your bracket, us Auburn fans, the best perspective on this Auburn team. How far can they legitimately go? They can make the Final Four.
They can win the whole thing.
They can win the whole daggum thing. You know it? Auburn could win the whole thing.
That's the most Southern thing that has ever come out of your Ohio mouth.
I know it. But they could also lose in the round of 32 to USC or Miami. And that's the problem. But let me ask you this. What is the one thing, what is the winning thing I have said all season long? What has to happen for Auburn basketball to win basketball games? What is
2-1 assist to turnover ratio?
From the guards. What have I said about the guards? 2 out of 3 of the main guards have to play well. Between Zepp, KD, and Wendell, 2 of the 3 have to have a good game. Not great, but at least if all three want to, Auburn will be unstoppable. But if 2 of the 3 of them can play good games, have 10 points, have a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, if 2 of the 3 of those guys can do that, Walker and Jabari are going to get their points and get their boards and do their thing. But if 2 of the 3 of the three main guards, Wendell, Zepp, and KD, if 2 of 3 play good, Auburn's going to win some basketball games, and they're going to make a run in this tournament. But what we've seen, especially over the last couple of weeks, all three are playing bad. None of them are playing good basketball. They're missing shots, they're turning the ball over, and they're not scoring. And those things have added up. Jabari and Walker can't carry this team because Auburn will meet a front court like USC in the second round. That'll match them up, and they're going to lose.
I'm going to counter your point here, though, about how does it change and everything. I know I asked that, and it may have sounded like a rhetorical question, but I legit was asking the question, how does it change? And here's my answer to how does it change. I said this earlier. I think it's overblown, the whole momentum thing going into the NCAA tournament. I think it's completely overblown. I definitely think it's overblown from the SEC Auburn standpoint because of what happened in 2019. You can have disaster happen to you towards the end of a season, and then maybe you can find your footing when you go into March. All of a sudden, it's a new season. This is the season right here, right now. You could be extremely hot. I was talking about this in the lens of Virginia Tech. They were extremely hot in the ACC tournament. Now they've taken a week off. They were hot when they were playing back-to-back-to-back-to-back on a day-to-day-to-day standpoint, right?
In the same arena,
same backdrop. That's going to help foster that type of run, right? I think that's something you see more in conference tournaments. In the NCAA tournament, it's a marathon, not a sprint. You play the first two rounds over the span of the end of the week and a weekend. You then take a week off, and you play on another weekend and the start of the next week. Then you take another week off, and it's the Final Four, and then you play a couple days later on that Monday in the national championship. But the location that you're playing at changes every time you get to the next clump. So first two rounds, Auburn's playing in Greenville. Now all of a sudden, you've got to switch to go where? To Chicago. Yeah, you got to go to Chicago for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. And then you're hopping from Chicago to New Orleans to play in the Final Four and the National Championship. The setting changes, the teams change, the style of play. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And so asking ourselves a question, how does all this change? It only takes one game, I think, for it to change. It only takes one positive performance, I think, for all this to change. Now, likewise, it can only take one performance for it to come back, right? Every game is a new game. Every game has nothing to do with the one that happened before it. I understand momentum. I don't think that conference tournament momentum necessarily, sometimes it does. I'm not going to say that it blanket statement that it doesn't always, but I think it's completely overblown to say somebody was playing really well in their conference tournament and that that's automatically going to carry into the NCAA tournament. They are two completely different scenarios, two completely different settings. It's a marathon, not a sprint. If you play well one week, the very next week you may play horribly, right? Just because UMBC beat Virginia had no meaning that team was just going to run through the rest of that tournament because they beat them on one night. Every night is different. Every shot is different. Every opponent is different. Every game is different. In this 60-18 tournament, it is a marathon, not a sprint. And so my answer to that question is, it's a whole new season, and it's a whole new ball game, and it's a whole nother opportunity for Auburn to turn it on. And if Auburn turns it on in just one game, blinders, tunnel vision, keep moving on to the next game and treat every game with the same amount of intensity as you did before. And if you do that and you play your style of basketball and you take an extreme amount of focus and care to do that, I think Auburn will be just fine because Auburn's talent, as we've pointed out, can carry them to Elite Eight. It can carry them to a Final Four. As you put it, they can win the whole daggum thing, right? So I think that's the way that I look at it.
No doubt about it. Let's take a break. Here on the line, you're listening to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. We have a couple contests going on. We'll give you more information when we come back. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Wednesday edition of the show. Just a few more minutes before we head to the national break at 3:30. But Noah, we have some contests going on here around Auburn Network. Let everybody know what the basketball mayhem contest we have going on.
That's right. You've got a chance to win $1 million. Well, make the perfect picks for our March Mayhem contest, and you'll have a chance to win just that. Plus, even if you don't win the $1 million, there's a 55-inch smart TV up for grabs, and it could be yours if you fill out the top bracket on our contest page. To register, go to ESPNAU.com. Deadline is tomorrow at 11 a.m. when those games tip off. Basketball Mayhem is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic, Pepsi Buffalo Rock, and the 19th Hole Restaurant and Sports Bar.
So make sure you go enter your bracket before tomorrow at 11 o'clock when the first game starts. You have a chance to win $1 million if you get the perfect bracket, or the best bracket in the Auburn-Opelika area will win a free 55-inch flat-screen TV. We also are giving away some Auburn baseball tickets. The Tigers open up against the number one team in the country, Ole Miss, for SEC play this weekend starting tomorrow night. That is Thursday at Plainsman Park. We have two tickets for each game this weekend, giving it away in a package deal. You can win six tickets to Auburn baseball at Plainsman Park this weekend. All you got to do is give us a call at 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-382-7502. You can enter the contest. We'll pick a winner immediately following the show. I'll give you a call, and you will win. You can come by and pick them up. All you got to do is call and enter your name into the drawing for six tickets for Auburn baseball versus Ole Miss at Plainsman Park this weekend. Let's head to the phone lines now again. 334-321-1390. Brett is on the line. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. Yeah, we're talking about what Auburn needs to do. I'm going to go out on a limb and say if Auburn will just shoot, and this is from the field, not from three, and this isn't even a good percentage, if they'll shoot 39 to 40% and have 15 or fewer turnovers, they'll go to the Final Four.
They're that talented. And I think that's fair. 40% ain't great, but you're right. The defense is that good.
And those aren't even good percentages or numbers.
Right.
I mean, if Auburn will just hold it, just do that. I mean, if you look at the games, Florida, I think they shot 40%, but they turned it over 17 times. And, of course, A&M and the Arkansas game, they just shot it awful, abysmal. I think it was below 35%.
But. Yeah, the shooting hasn't been good, but the number that you talk about is the turnovers. I think that's the biggest one, especially in the NCAA tournament where momentum is so big because of just the stage that you're on. If Auburn continues to turn the ball over and let teams – in the second round, like a USC or Miami who can shoot the ball and they start turning the ball over and giving up possessions, they could be out very early. But if they limit those, there's no doubt. I agree with you, Brett. They can make a legitimate Final Four run.
Y'all have a great day.
Thanks for the call, Brett. We appreciate you. That was Brett here on the line.
He's definitely right that you need both, because in the A&M game, they shot like 30% and only had 11 turnovers,
exactly.
Right? So not a bad turnover day, but he's right, though. 40% is not great. I talked about that earlier. 40% lands you outside the top 200 in field goal percentage. It probably lands you, actually, as a team, if you're shooting only around 40%, it probably lands you outside the top 300 in the nation. It's not good. It's bad. But his point is that the defense is so good, and that if Auburn just – we know that they're struggling to shoot the basketball, their defense is going to keep them in games. And if they don't turn the ball over – and, you know, even if they just hit 40% of their shots, you know, maybe 34% or something like that from three, and just don't play bad basketball. Play smart basketball. You got to make sure you rebound, close out possessions. Get you some second chance points as well. I would argue that Auburn needs to go and gobble up the offensive rebounds like we know that they do, which is nearly 30% of their offensive rebound opportunities. So when you break down like that, I mean, definitely with Auburn's athleticism, with Auburn's talent, I don't disagree too much there. Now, I do think when you get to the Elite Eight and you run into a Kansas, if that's who Auburn ends up playing, or maybe an Iowa who's extremely hot right now, if you run into one of those two teams, you probably do need to shoot the basketball a little bit better. But those two teams also, especially Iowa, and Kansas is just above average on defense, I would argue. You look at those two teams, they're not as gifted defensively as what Auburn will face in the first three rounds of the tournament. As soon as Auburn makes it to the Elite Eight, I would argue that defense, the level of defense that they will be playing against, albeit it is still good, it is not nearly as difficult as what they will face potentially through the first three rounds, aside from Jacksonville State, because they're going to either get These are the three teams that I think Auburn could play after that first round matchup against Jacksonville State. I think you are going to get USC, and then you are either going to get LSU or Wisconsin. And all three of those teams can play and guard very well, especially guard their own rim well. That's a problem for Auburn, especially with where their offense looks to score and where they try and get Walker Kessler basketball and whatnot.
It shows how much talent this team has. They don't even have to shoot the ball well. Just shoot it halfway decent, don't turn the ball over, and just play smart offense, and they can still make a run in the NCAA tournament. Let's take a break. We'll come back for the last 30 minutes. You're listening to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Welcome back in to On the Line. You're on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on today's show. Just about 30 more minutes before we get out of here. The Drive will be on at 4 o'clock with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. So make sure you tune in and stay tuned in for that. If you've missed any of our show today, immediately following us off the air, we'll upload our podcast. Just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. We've had a bunch of people calling in about the baseball ticket giveaway. So make sure if you're interested in joining and or spending the weekend at Plainsman Park to watch Auburn baseball take on the number one team in the country, Ole Miss. We're giving away two tickets to each game this weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday as a package deal. All you got to do is give us a call and give us your name, and we will put you down in the drawing. We're giving away a whole package of tickets for the weekend. The Drive will be doing the same, but our contest will be over at 4. So if you miss out on our contest, you can call into The Drive and put your name into their contest. We will also have a giveaway on all of our social media pages. Just search ESPN 106.7 on all social medias, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We will have a giveaway going on there as well. So give us a call, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502. You can also call in and give us anything that's on your mind going on in the sporting world, baseball, basketball, football, whatever it is, wrestling, I don't care. Give us a call. We want to hear from you, 334-321-1390. Noah, let's keep looking at the NCAA tournament bracket because obviously – it gets underway tomorrow officially. The first four has been going on. Indiana, your boys pulled it out last night. The Hoosiers didn't play well against Wyoming, but Wyoming, I would say, just played worse than Indiana. So the Hoosiers are now in as a 12 seed as they will be playing number 5, St. Mary's. What do you think of Indiana playing last night?
I don't think they played their best. It's another team that I think is an example of someone that definitely has – I think this is an example of somebody that definitely, you look at how they played in their conference tournament, they cooled down. It's the exact same thing that I was talking about, how I think it's overblown when people talk about, oh, they got the hot hand. Yeah, they have the hot hand in the Big Ten tournament. Did they have the hot hand in the NCAA tournament? It's about getting hot in the NCAA tournament. It doesn't mean both. And they've been kind of lumped together, I think, with conference tournaments. And Indiana definitely, I think, did not play their best game last night, but they definitely negated a lot of what Wyoming does well, which is scoring the paint, and they don't turn the basketball over. Yesterday, they had double their turnovers.
And, I mean, that's going to get you beat in the tournament. Yep. Let's just be real. That's going to get you beat. Of course, two more first four games tonight. You have Wright State and Bryant, the two 16 seeds, trying to get into the big field. Wright State playing right there from Dayton. I know I have a lot of friends that went to Wright State up there in Dayton, Ohio. And then the 11th seed of Rutgers and Notre Dame. The winner of that will go on and play Alabama on Friday, the 6th seed. And Noah, we like either one of those teams, whoever wins, to beat Alabama in the first round. I think Notre Dame would have a better chance than Rutgers, but either one of those teams I have beating Alabama in the first round, no matter who wins tonight.
The formula likes Alabama over Rutgers, but not over Notre Dame.
Okay, you know? Interesting.
I think Rutgers definitely plays a style of play that Alabama should not want to face. I definitely think it's something because they slow you down. They're strong in the front court. I think Bama would have a really hard time rebounding against them. They play good defense. Bama doesn't want to slow down. They want to speed up. They want to shoot a lot of threes, and I think Rutgers would definitely make them miss a lot. My question is, does Rutgers have enough of the tank offensively maybe against this Alabama team who's going to get a lot of second-chance points? I think Alabama maybe would find a way to squeeze it out over Rutgers. And I think they definitely can beat Notre Dame. I think both of those games, you know, I don't feel great about, you know, pulling the upset there just because I know Alabama's got a lot of talent in the backcourt, and it may be just enough to get past both of those teams. But they'll run into a buzzsaw in the next round that will end their tournament extremely quickly.
There's no doubt. I like either Rutgers or Notre Dame to beat Alabama in the first round. I just don't think Alabama is going to be able to have the discipline on defense and be able to shoot the ball well enough to beat anybody in the tournament, because over the past month they haven't done so. And you know, we just got done talking about Auburn trying to hit the reset button coming into the NCAA tournament. Alabama is for sure going to try and do the exact same thing. But I just don't think this team has it. What Auburn and Alabama are obviously completely different, because Auburn has the dudes. Auburn has the talent on the team to actually be a legit Final Four team. While Alabama, yes, they've beaten some big teams throughout the regular season. It's because they shot the lights out at home to get it done, okay? Alabama, playing defensively, their discipline is through the floor. It is opposite of what it should be. They don't play defense. There's times where they don't run back. They don't run up and down the floor. And then, at the end of the day, they think their identity is to shoot the ball 40 times from three, but they haven't figured out that they can't make them very much. Obviously, Alabama has had teams in the past, had teams in the tournament in the past that lived and died by the three and were able to survive on that for a couple rounds. But I don't see this Alabama team being able to do that, because they haven't shown that they can make it consistently. And at the end of the day, I don't see Alabama doing hardly anything. We talked to Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports this week. He said the best scenario is Alabama to win. The best scenario would be Alabama to make a run. But he said as long as they can just win a game, I think you just move on from the season. And I kind of agree. Alabama will probably be favored in their first round matchup. I would think they would be favored against either Rutgers or Notre Dame, but in my opinion, man, I just don't see how Alabama's going to be able to put it together and win a first round game.
It's definitely going to be tough, especially with one of those teams getting their feet underneath them and maybe them generating a little bit of momentum for themselves after that first four game against each other, which is tonight, which I think is obviously that's going to be the fun one tonight. But Bryant's got some scores on offense. That Bryant Wright State game should be very entertaining this evening.
Let's head to the phone lines now, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. We got Bama Dog. Welcome back.
Bruh, you know y'all was going to get this call.
As soon as I saw that it was from you, I was like, yep.
Yep.
Yeah, after all that fire, come on, bruh.
Well, what you got for me, man?
Who from the SEC beat Gonzaga this year? Bama. Who beat Houston? Bama. Who beat Baylor? Bama. Who beat Tennessee? Bama. Come on, man.
But who beat Alabama? Georgia.
look, you got to look. You play a bad game, you're going to get beat.
Fair enough.
Alabama got more experience than Auburn has playing in the tournament.
Yes, that is true.
Auburn didn't do what Alabama did last year concerning the SEC. Bama was regular season SEC champ and tournament champ.
But yet they lost in the Sweet 16 to UCLA.
They lost in the Sweet 16 because of rebounding. It wasn't because they couldn't shoot.
And so
they set the game in the overtime on it with a three-pointer from Alex Reed. Bama can shoot the three. They will shoot the three in this tournament. They will go farther than Auburn in this tournament. Mark my words.
That is a bold prediction, but I like it. I like the prediction, Bama Dog.
I'm telling you. Y'all got me heated.
Well, let me ask you this. How far does Bama go? In your mind, realistically, how far does Alabama go in this NCAA tournament?
Back to the Sweet 16, possibly Elite Eight.
Why do you like them over Texas Tech? Just curious.
Because Bama can shoot the three.
Bama Dog? They shoot 30% in SEC play.
Bruh, they got five guys that can legitimately shoot three-pointers.
But we haven't seen it, and that's the problem. We've seen it very rarely this season from this Alabama team. I agree with you. At times, absolutely, they have shown that they can shoot the three, especially their starters.
They don't need all five of them. They only need two.
But can those two even show up? That's my problem. That's my issue.
Two of five. And the person that's leading the team in three-point percentage right now, is J.D. Davidson over the last 10 games.
That's not a good sign. I'm going to be really honest with you.
That's a great sign. He wasn't hitting flip at the beginning of the year. Now he's making no shots.
You bring up, I mean, you got an interesting point, man.
Bama dog, there are two Alabama players that shoot above 30% on the team that are consistently taking threes. Two of them. Everybody else below 30%. That's not a good look.
Listen, Alabama cut down on the turnovers, just like Auburn. If they cut down on the turnovers, they hit the threes, it's a wrap.
Alabama's got to play better defense, too. I mean, that adds into it. They can't get in a shootout with a lot of teams because, again, I don't trust Alabama's three-point shooting on a consistent basis for them to just outshoot another team in the tournament. I really don't, man.
They basically outshot LSU in his last game. Turnovers killed them.
I mean, but Bama doll, that was several games ago. But let me throw some stats at you, and I'm fully in support of you being optimistic for your team. Auburn fans are doing the exact same thing. It's March. This is where you got to believe, right? The team's got to believe. So I'm not against you here. But I got to push back a little bit on some of the stats because three-point percentage, Alabama's 310th nationally. In defense, they're 326th in points allowed. I mean, those are two stats right there, Bama Dog, that are absolutely killer. They're 205th. I got that one wrong. They're as far as turnovers are concerned, they are giving up over 14.6 per game. That's not a good stat either. I mean, they've got a lot of things working against them when you look at them statistically.
But those are things that could be fixed.
They absolutely can be fixed.
If it was something that couldn't be fixed, I would say one and done.
And then very well, yeah.
But those are things that could be fixed. They don't have no ordinary coach.
Yeah,
they don't have no ordinary coach at all. You know what I'm saying? You get two preseason All SEC guys. You got a five-star player on that team.
And look, Auburn's in the exact same situation. Auburn has some issues that, sure, they can be fixed, but at this point in the season, I mean, it's the middle of March. The tournament starts tomorrow. I think it's a little too late for these problems to be fixed. I've said the same thing about Auburn. I'm saying the same thing about Alabama. I think Auburn will go a little bit farther just because of the talent, but both of these teams have issues, and I think it's going to be too little too late for them to make a run in the NCAA tournament. Bama Dog, we appreciate the call, my man.
All right, guys. I'll take it easy.
That was Bama Dog on the line. I like it, man.
I always love talking to Bama Dog.
I do, too.
He's one of my favorite callers.
He comes in, talks real. He talks what he thinks, and that's what we want. If anybody else wants to call in, give us your opinion on Alabama, Auburn, or your team in the NCAA tournament. We want to hear from you, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502. We want to hear from you. But let me reiterate before we go to break, Alabama and Auburn are in the same boat. They both have legitimate problems that – in my opinion, I don't see them fixing now that it's the tournament. And they've had these problems for a month, month and a half. And yeah, it's a little bit different. Auburn plays a high level of defense. Alabama does not. Both teams can't shoot the three. Alabama's turning it over a little bit more than Auburn, but both still have those issues. And so these problems have to be fixed in order for both of these teams to win some games in the NCAA tournament. I don't see it happening. Look, let's be honest. I want these teams to be successful, and I want them to have some runs because it makes the SEC look good. But I don't see how it's going to happen deep, especially for Alabama, but for Auburn as well. Let's take a break. We'll head back to the phone lines when we come back. Brett, hold on just a second. We'll get to you when we come back. You're listening to On the Line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you on the Wednesday edition of the show. Just a few more minutes before we get out of here. The drive will be on at 4 o'clock, so make sure you stay tuned in for that. Let's head to the phone lines, though, 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-382-7502. Brett, you're back on the line. Welcome.
Hey, did y'all change the name of this show to I Dream of Jeannie?
No, we did not. This is On the Line.
Okay.
He's messing, man.
Twice within the last less than a week, I've heard about J.D. Davidson shooting the three. He made three threes in one game. The last seven games, he's 4 of 19 from three.
And that's,
The guy is he's abysmal from three. He's not decent. He's not average. He's abysmal.
And that's what I was, yeah. That's what I was trying to tell. I never said he was good. That's what I was trying to tell Bama Dog. He said that J.D. Davidson was their best three-point shooter, and that's why I said that's not a good sign, because that's not what you want for Alabama.
Well, please go look it up. I mean, you'll be shocked. I mean, he's Devin Cambridge. he's Devin Cambridge from three.
Hey, I've seen this. I just looked at the stats. I'm not disagreeing with you, Brett, 100%. I got it pulled up right here. J.D. Davidson this year has shot 29% from three, and he's averaging 8.5 points. He shot 46% from the field, which is a little bit better than I expected. But, yeah, I definitely don't know if my tournament hopes I would want to be hanging on J.D. Davidson.
No, not what. Put it this way. There's a better chance. I'm 59 years old. There's a better chance next year I play point guard in the NBA than Alabama's going to the Elite Eight.
I mean, look, it's a tough road for Alabama. Even if they were playing better basketball than they are, they still have one of the toughest roads in the tournament to make the Elite Eight or a Final Four. I agree with you, Brett. And then at the same time, J.D. Davidson just hasn't really gotten any better since he showed up at Alabama. He's a fantastic athlete. He's a five-star player. I get all that. But he just hasn't really been developed a whole lot for that Alabama squad. Brett, we appreciate the call.
Yeah, he already hung up.
Oh, did he? Okay, all right, I didn't hear it. So, well, he caught me off guard. I was like, wait a minute. But, no, he's 100% right. J.D. Davidson is not going to be the saving grace for this Alabama team in the tournament. That's just not going to happen. Could Alabama win a game? Sure. But their second-round matchup is going to be more than likely Texas Tech, and their defense is way too good, and their offense is pretty solid, too. I think Texas Tech would roll over Alabama in the second round.
I like that matchup a lot for Texas Tech to be successful. This has been a fun show. At the end of the day, March is about everybody being excited about their team and believing in their team. And if you want to believe in – if Alabama fans, I'm sure, believe, especially if they could recapture the magic that they had with Gonzaga and Baylor and all those. But just as equally, you could also have – losses to teams like Georgia or somebody else crop back up in the NCAA tournament, you know.
Let's head back to the phone line, 334-321-1390. Bama Dog, welcome back.
First of all, I did not say he was the best three-point shooter on the team. I said over the last 5 to 7 games, he's shooting better than he's shooting better on the team. That's what I said.
Okay, well, I misunderstood you, but
I would not Bama's tournament host on J.D. Davidson making threes.
But at the same time, that doesn't change. That's still not a good sign if you're Alabama, if J.D. Davidson is shooting the best over the last couple of games. You want him to be better and shoot better from the three, but I still stand on that.
Well, the percentage is up there, guys. Look that up over the last 7 or 5 games.
I got Noah on it. He's looking.
Yeah, the percentage is up there. On top of that, He's making a lot of plays with the alley-oop to Bidiaso, and he's not turning the ball over as much as he was early in the year. I'm not going to sit up here and keep going back and forth, whoever call in and dispute what I'm saying. That's why they play the game. That's why it's called the NCAA tournament. Alabama got guys on that team that played last year that made the deep run. Sure enough, we don't have Herb. We don't have John Petty. We don't have Alex Reese. We don't have those guys. But I'm telling you guys, I got faith in Nate Oates. They always putting up – they got to hit 103 before they finish up their practice in a certain amount of time. They do it every day, every practice. They have to hit 103 on a time clock before they finish up. That's the drill. They can make these shots. They will make these shots.
Well, look, Bama Dog, there's no doubt. This is the NCAA tournament. Everybody has a shot. It's anybody's ball game every single day. That's what makes the NCAA tournament so much fun.
I did get the stats, by the way.
And?
Bama Dog, I'm sorry, but over the last eight games, J.D. Davidson has shot 23% from three, which is lower than his season average of 29%, and he's still turning the ball over 3 times a game over that same stretch.
Okay, I'll take the 3 turnovers, but I won't take that shooting percentage. You got me on that.
And that's fine, but look, Bama Dog.
Let me ask y'all this.
Okay.
What was UCLA doing the latter part of the season?
Bad. They were not doing well, and that's why you're talking about last year, and I get
exactly.
That. Yeah, exactly. Anybody can get hot. You are not wrong. Exactly. Anybody can get hot.
Yep.
Exactly, exactly. I'm not going to write them off like that.
And that's fine.
I don't know what kind of talent is on that team. I'm not going to write them off like that.
And you are a fan of Alabama, and I wouldn't expect you to do so, nor with any other fan and their team in the NCAA tournament. I tell you this, Bama dog, before I let you go, if Alabama comes in and makes a run in this tournament, I want you to call in and tell us we were wrong, because that's what we're about. But I just don't see it happening. Bama dog, we appreciate the callback, man.
No problem. No problem.
That was Bama Dog again. Look, I'm all for defending your team, man. I get it. You have confidence in your team going into the tournament. I wouldn't know what that feels like, but I respect it, man. I really do. If you have confidence in your team, no matter who it is, Auburn, Alabama, Gonzaga, Vermont, Yale, I don't care who it is. If you have confidence in your team, you should. You want to be feeling good because this is March. March Madness is the best sporting event in all of sports all season long, and it's the most fun. It's the most exciting. And yet again, it's anybody's game every single day, every single round
in the NCAA tournament. Outside of J.D. Davidson's poor three-point shooting, which honestly he should probably avoid the three-point line like it's the plague, outside of his three-point shooting, which has been abysmal, he actually has been rather efficient when he gets to the rim. And he has had 4 games over his last 8, finishing double figures. He is coming off the bench. He is averaging 4.5 assists per game over that stretch. And he has had a lot of rebounds across that stretch. 7, 5, 3, 6, 10, 7, 10, 4 over all of his last 8 games. So he is doing some other things better, I think. He's also creating turnovers. He's had 2 3 steal games, 3 total multi-steal games across that same stretch. He's done some other things. The three-point shooting, though, is not where I would – and Bama Dog admitted that once we brought that up. And, you know, 22% from 3 is not where you want to be at. I don't think 3 turnovers a game off the bench is where you want to be at either. But he's definitely doing a better job. I think when he gets downhill, gets to the rim, rebounds, and is dishing to his teammates.
Look, if Alabama shoots the ball and limits their turnovers, they're going to win some games. Auburn's the same way, but so is everybody else in the NCAA tournament. That's it for the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay safe. See ya.